All right, we are back. Another episode of Lions Collective. We're live Wednesdays at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi. Alongside me, we have Detroit Football Network's own Justin Rogers. We got the Athletic Zone, Colton Pouncey. And, of course, Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. He's in a different location again. At this point, it's becoming more and more of a bit. I love it. He's working out of his car in a random gas station. So that's commitment.
Yeah, I'm in a Sunoco parking lot in the outskirts of Detroit. I was trying to make it into our office to record there, but people forget how to drive in the snow, the first snowfall of the year. They're going like 10 miles an hour. I had no choice but to pull off.
People really lose their minds in the snow. It's crazy.
It's insane, dude. How to do everything. Like driving backwards.
Yeah. In a state that snows, people don't know how to drive in snow.
Yeah.
Still doesn't make any sense to me. I lived in Georgia for 2 years. No one knew how to drive out there, but it was fair because it didn't sure. snow. You know, didn't
excusable.
Snow. Excusable. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's no excuse here. we got a lot to get to today, fellas. Obviously, last Thursday, Thanksgiving game, we talked about it on Wednesday, previewed it. We now have those results. Obviously, a lot of news transpired ever since we went live. I mean, Frank Ragnow, apparently his hamstring just torn off the bone. All right, so things just happen, and that happened after we went live. Lions lost to the Packers, and there's a big game tomorrow. Lions-Cowboys. Lions are favored by 3, I think, so it's at Ford Field, another game. But I guess we'll just kind of start just from unless you guys want to just talk a little about the Frank Ragnow situation, we can hammer it at the beginning. Just get your guys' thoughts on what I just got so much respect for Frank Ragnow. I just want to start off saying that. To have a grade 3, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a grade 3 hamstring, to just be like, Dan be like, oh yeah, he just kind of figured he could, you know, tough through that. It's like, no, dude, that's basically, again, not a doctor, tore off the bone, essentially. So Frank Ragnow is not going to come back this season. But what was kind of your guys' reaction to him returning? Everyone's, yay, excited, to then not returning. Now that's no longer an option this year.
Feels like the perfect like encapsulation of what's gone on this season. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a politically correct comparison, but it's kind of how I've gone in my mind with this. Yeah, we're going right off the bat.
Let's go.
Non-politically correct. But like you hear sometimes with overdoses, you know, it's the people that have been rehabbing off the stuff for a while, then they come back and they try to go right back to what their tolerance level was, you know, pre getting clean, and you know, your body's just not used to it. And I have this sneaking suspicion that Frank, you know, hit up his local Planet Fitness after he's planning on getting back, you know, racks up 800 on the leg press, because that's what he was doing when he left. And you know, maybe the body wasn't ready. And look, I don't know this, but that is just kind of how I'm envisioning it. Is, you know, I think this kind of came together quickly. And even if it's a month or 5 weeks, like that's still quickly in terms of, you know, going from 0 to 100 and popping right into the regular season. And so like, you know, I think there was probably a sense of urgency to get into physical shape. And, you know, this might've just been one of those situations where he pushed too hard, too fast, and the body gave out. And look, offensive linemen might be the toughest dudes on the planet. Like they play through all kinds of ridiculous shit. We've seen it all year with Taylor Decker playing through, you know, a shoulder that's, you know, together with toothpicks and rubber cement and maybe a little duct tape. So to imagine that Frank Ragnow was walking around with a grade 3 hamstring is more believable than 99% of the population.
It's the most Frank Ragnow story I've ever heard. I mean, a lot of people are trying to make this some conspiracy. Oh, like, when did he know? Was he trying to steal money from the team? I don't think that doesn't sound like Frank, man. Like, if you know Frank, wrong you dude. Know that he, like, just plays through shit. Like, he really does. He just plays through things. He does. So it's like, that's very much a Frank Ragnow thing, to be able to walk around with a grade 3 hamstring strain and be like, yeah, I can play football. Yeah, I can play in the NFL. So that's where he's at. And it's unfortunate, man. It really is, because I thought that he was going to have a chance to come back and maybe play against the Rams. That kind of seems like the date they were targeting. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. It's going to be a lot harder to get these wins down the stretch that they just so desperately need without a guy like that. So really tough, and kind of feel for Frank.
Yeah, dude, we watched DJ Reed miss 2 months of time with a grade 2 hamstring strain. And for like a good month, month and a half of that, he was limping around the locker room anytime we saw him. And Frank was just potentially living, just existing with a grade three hamstring strain. I mean, to echo both of your guys' points, Colton and Jeff, like, again, this is the same guy who played through, I lost the lights in here, oh man, who played through what was deemed a fractured throat, who last year played through a partially torn pec, who literally said to Jared Goff in the middle of the Cardinals game last year, after the play where he got hurt, "Hey, I think I tore my pec." And Jared said to him, "You good? You want to come out of the game?" And he was like, "Nah, I'm good. I'll finish the game." He never missed snaps in games when he got hurt. He just soldiered through because that's what he always did. I'm going to try to get some lighting back on in here.
No, he looked great. Just don't freeze.
Look good to us.
How about this? Oh, yeah, we're back. We are so back. No, but you know what? I think the emotional swing of Frank's announced return and then non-return was actually more extreme on the outside than inside the locker.
About that, and Decker was like, you know, it was obviously great news and we were looking forward to having him, but I didn't, this is Decker speaking, expect to have him until after the Rams game next week. So it would have been the Steelers game with three games to go. And you know, Graham had kind of the same outlook. He was like, I took a pretty pragmatic approach to this and was like, yeah, it's great to have him, but like, it's not going to pay any immediate dividends. And like, is it really going to make a difference by the time he comes back with three games to go? So I think Graham put it best. He was like, the coaches in the NFL on any team always tell.
I think we keep losing Will between and out of his car audio.
Yeah. I think I hooked up to his car.
He was cooking though.
Yeah, I think that's what happened there.
He was cooking.
Hooked right up to the. It's the trade off. You get lights. You know. Now we look.
I'm worried we're gonna lose his battery. He's gonna freeze to death, and it's all gonna be on the podcast.
Are you going, Will? You back?
We got you.
All right. Well,
he's not back.
All right, he'll figure that out. We'll get, you know what? It's like the comments are saying, you know, Will's just getting shut out now. Just getting muted. Now, Mustafa, I don't know who's doing it. Too long of tangents, Will. It's become a problem. Now you're just getting muted now. He'll figure it out. He'll be back. Well, I mean, I guess we could get right into the game from the Frank Randall stuff.
Because... Oh, how about now?
Oh, hey.
He's back. Hey.
All right. Hey, tell me where I left off.
I don't know.
You were.
Oh, anyway, so Graham was just like, it's kind of poetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, it's kind of poetic that, you know, we're the only guys we got. And as he put it, it's just time to pull yourself up and get your fucking job done. That's it. That's how it was always going to be. And that's how it is now. And Frank's non-return doesn't change that at all. So look, it's up to the guys who are in place and we'll see what that means down the stretch.
Will, you've used up our last F-bomb. One more and we get rated R.
Yeah. I almost said another one.
Hey. It's been that kind of week.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely been that kind of week. I mean, you had last week at least the loss on Thanksgiving. To the pack. Oh, now we can hear ourselves.
Now we're getting Will's feedback through his radio. Man, 97.1, like a radio employee over here.
Yeah, you know, you ever hear yourself back and you're like, wow, I hate that. You ever hear your own voice back? Yeah, that's how you
feel. So that's the worst. The worst.
I wanted to bring up the Thanksgiving. So the Lions dropped the game to the Packers. They get swept this year in that game. They're, you know, Matt LaFleur. I said on the show, I was him. I went on the show. I said, I can't imagine. I think you guys actually, one of you guys said that too.
I said it too.
Yeah. I was with you, Will. I was like, I can't imagine Matt LaFleur sweeping. Oh, it happened. They swept the Lions. One score game when it's all said and done. Not that the not taking a field goal mattered anyway. They lost by a touchdown. But in that game, defensively, the Packers, you know, had 300, almost 400 total yards. It kind of, and we talked about this also last week with the defense, because the Giants game, they gave up a ton of yards. You know, I was with you guys. We had the discussion, one-off performance, but then you go into the Packers game, almost 400 yards. You know, I think it was about 6 yards of play the Packers had. Jordan Love had four touchdown passes. I guess, and Calvin Shepard spoke to the media and he hit on a lot of points. I know one of the big ones people questioned is just the pass rush. They weren't able to actually get Jordan Love down. They didn't get a single sack in that game. Aleem actually had a pretty good game. Aiden, many people were going at Aiden Hutchinson. But what is kind of your guys' takeaway now getting another game with another poor defensive performance? What's kind of, I guess, where are you guys at with the defense and confidence that they can correct this into tomorrow with one of the hottest offenses right now in the NFL?
I'm going to start with some pass rush stats because I know Colton's got so many more. Always
in the holster
to hear them. But, you know, I think that we've reached a point now where we kind of understand, and maybe we always did, that the pass rush is a big problem. Right. And I think Muhammad was playing really well early in the season and kind of covering up their need for more help for Hutchinson. I thought, you know, Aleem coming back was going to bridge that further. And Aleem was phenomenal against Green Bay. I mean, he really was. Yep. I think he was the best defensive player on the field most of that game, generated quite a bit of pressure. But end of the day, the stat that stands out this week is, or the stats that stand out this week is, the Lions are slowest in the NFL to get pressure. They're giving teams the most time to throw. The average depth of target because of that is the longest in the NFL. And, you know, the secondary is doing their job, all things considered. The separation that they're allowing is the least in the NFL. The yards after carry or yards after catch is the least in the NFL. And so it's a problem. It's a problem because they can't get the quick pressures. It's what's, you know, the big, big issue. Hutchinson maybe gets one or two a game. Aleem got one. Unfortunately, they got one on the last play and it still didn't matter in this case, but they need to find a way to take some pressure off Hutchinson so he can generate a little bit more of these, because he can't get them because of the chips and the nudges and the double teams. And Lord knows nobody on the opposite side of that line is providing them right now. It's four straight games now without a sack for Muhammad. And part of that is a lack of opportunities. They're not playing him enough. He's had 15 or fewer snaps on the edge in three of the last four games. And, you know, when I hear Calvin Shepard say, I'm going to make adjustments this week, to me, that's the first one that comes to mind. If Muhammad is not being hindered by injury, which maybe he is, maybe we don't know that, but he's not on the injury report, he needs more, because I think he's the one that can most help create some opportunities opposite Hutchinson.
Yeah, it's a tough balance because I think they want to play Davenport because he obviously just got back, but it's like Muhammad is sort of the splash play guy, and that's kind of where I wanted to take this conversation, because True Media does have a stat called splash play rate. And for those that don't know, splash play is basically any like havoc play. So you got a sack, pressure, TFL, run stuff, pass stuff, third or fourth down stop, interception, forced fumble, fumble recovery, or pass defended. Those all fall under this category. So normally you're going to see edge rushers with all the pressure numbers and whatnot be higher on this list. But for example, from weeks 1 to 9, Al-Quadi Muhammad was third in the NFL in splash play rate at 17.8%. Aiden Hutchinson was not far behind. He was 11th from weeks 1 to 9 at 16.1%. That means on 16.1% and 17.8% of their snaps, they're creating havoc and making splash plays. Since then, so weeks 10 and on, both players have fallen out of the top 100 defenders. Hutchinson is 101st at 9.4%. Al-Quadi Muhammad is 121st at 8.3%. And I think there are a couple factors for that. I look at Hutchinson and I'm like, this guy's playing so many snaps, and he always has, right? That's, I guess, not that different from, you know, his first couple years in the league, but this is his first full season since 2023. He is coming back from an injury. He is getting chipped, I believe, at the third highest rate in the NFL based on a PFF last time I checked at that. So he's going through a maze just to try to get to the quarterback. And I think that kind of accounts for some of, you know, the time to pressure stats that we see. It's taking him a while. He's getting there. He's still getting pressures, but just not at the speed that you want. And, you know, he's not a speed rusher on his own anyway. So it's all, he's more of an effort guy and can win with a spin every now and then. But like, that's sort of what you get with Hutch. And when you're adding a tight end, a running back, just to chip him, it takes even longer. And then on the other end, Al-Quadi Muhammad, I feel like he's just kind of regressed to the mean. Like, this is kind of, you know, I think he can be better than 121st. So maybe it's somewhere in the middle there that he has to find. But you didn't expect him to be third in the NFL for the course of the season. You're sort of getting what you pay for at that point. So, I look at that and I'm like, he's sort of regressed. And that's, he was not going to play at that level the entire season. And when we talk about the edge rushing position all offseason, you know, you look at guys that are no longer here, like Josh Pascal, they were expecting him. He has not played a snap this year. Yvonne Zarike did some stuff on the edge last year. They're probably expecting to do more of that this year. He goes down before the season starts. Davenport, they really relied on him. Probably shouldn't have done that, but they were. He missed, I think he's only played 3 games this year. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at that position now, and it's like they put a lot on Hutchinson's back, and to his credit, he's done what he can. But I do think there's a separation in tier between him and a Myles Garrett, him and a Micah Parsons. So if you're expecting him to do all the same things that he can do, those guys can do, you might be a little bit disappointed. He can still give you a lot, but he can't do it all on his own. And that's sort of a conversation I feel like we've been having for parts of 3 years now. And that's, I feel like it's going to continue being a conversation until they find a long-term sparring partner with for him on the edge.
I just want to quickly chip in some playtime stats here to supplement Colton's opinion. Actually really surprised to see Max Crosby's jump back up there, but it's always Aiden Hutchinson and Max Crosby right there at that top of that list, right? Aiden's played 93.1% defensive snaps this year. Max Crosby's at 92.1. Number three, Chris Jones, 80.9. That's a golf.
Yeah.
That's a golf. And so, I mean, obviously there's linebackers and cornerbacks and safeties that, that play 100%. It's a different position, different body types, right? Different. They're not engaged with offensive tackles down in and down out. Like, rotation is important. And I did notice that Hutchinson was off the field for a couple snaps there in that first drive against Green Bay. I wonder if that was just maybe the short week, a little bit of an adjustment, but I think it's just a symptom of they have no one else. Like, they don't trust anyone else to come out there and do anything. They don't have another guy. And so, and they're also, I don't like the fact that they trust him to decide when to pull out the field. Like, at some level, like, your coaches have to take a little bit more control of that situation and not let your players dictate how much they're playing.
Yeah, and just to round that point off, Hutch currently 10th in the NFL in sacks. All of the other guys who are top 10 in the league in sacks are playing closer to 70-75% at most of the defensive snaps. And because of that, they're able to finish a lot of those plays and convert a lot of those pressures into sacks. I was joking, but also kind of serious this week when I turned to Jay Raj and I think John Neo in the Lions media room, and I was like, the Lions defense converts sacks into pressures, and this happens literally sometimes. Like, Al-Quadin Muhammad in the Giants game literally had Winston wrapped up in a sack, and Winston squirts out and eventually throws a bomb like 17 yards downfield for a first down. But I think the Lions defense right now is hammering home a point that we should all acknowledge, that all quarterback pressures are not created equal. And just take last week's game, where the Lions combined, this is per Pro Football Focus, for 17 pressures and no sacks. And the Packers combined for 15 pressures, two fewer and three sacks, three more. And part of that is just the simple difference between Micah Parsons and Aiden Hutchinson. But it's also because those pressures from Green Bay are arriving much more quickly than those from the Lions. And like last week, Jordan Love had at least 2.5 seconds to throw on 2/3 of his dropbacks, one of the highest rates in the league last week. Jared Goff had well less than he had that much time to throw on well less than half of his dropbacks. And the week prior, Jameis Winston had at least 2.5 seconds to throw on more than 3/4 of his dropbacks, by far the highest rate in the NFL that week. And, you know, it's funny, Shep goes to the podium yesterday and he kind of refutes or swats away this notion that you just have to win your one-on-one. Like, no shit, he said, but it's also the truth in the NFL. Like, every single game comes down to a handful of one-on-one matchups. And right now the Lions just aren't winning theirs consistently enough up front. And like, this is an Aiden Hutchinson conversation as much as anyone else. And he did have a number of one-on-one opportunities last week. If you go back and watch that film, mostly against Zach Tom, and Zach Tom mostly got the best of him. There were a couple bull rushes where he just held up long enough to give Love time to throw, a couple speed rushes where he kind of wiped him out, washed him out around the edge. And, you know, he had a couple reps too, where like he stunted inside and didn't get home quickly enough, or Rashid Walker on the left tackle did just enough. And a lot of those rushes, or not a lot, but three of them anyways, ended up in pressures, but none of them ended up in the splash plays that Colton is talking about. And those are the plays that swing games. And I'll kind of put my hand up on Al-Quadin Muhammad, because I wrote a very glowing story about him right around the time his play leveled off and then just plummeted. And, you know, there was a point when he was inserted into this defense in a pretty major role in week two. Over the next like 6 weeks, I believe it was, he had the exact same number of sacks and quarterback pressures as TJ Watt over that stretch and Danielle Hunter over that stretch. He was literally playing and producing like one of the best pass rushers, not defensive ends, but pass rushers in the NFL. And maybe we should have known that he would eventually come back down to earth. And in the meantime, so is Hutch. And I think it's a legitimate and fair question to ask if he is just worn out at this point in the season.
Man, you had me look it up because I was curious. Hutchinson's played 23% more snaps than Myles Garrett this year.
Wow.
And that's really surprising. And then you want to go to edge snaps. 707 for Hutchinson, 196 for Muhammad. Like, you're not giving your second best guy the opportunities to do it. And I get it. Like, you want to stop the run and you're prioritizing that. But like, I don't know. Like, is the balance right? It doesn't feel right now.
Yeah, I think that's the big question going into tomorrow. You have this Dallas Cowboys team, which Dak Prescott, he can move. He's, you know, not your typical, you look at mobile quarterbacks like Lamar, Josh, but he can move, especially in the pocket. You have two great wide receivers, arguably, I would say one of the best. They're playing like the best wide receiver duo right now. Davante Adams, Puka, you have those guys. And then offensive line that's actually been pretty good, and they've been good at running the ball. So I think the big question going into tomorrow is, what does Kelvin Shepard do? We have someone who asked a question as well, like, what, asking Robo, he says, what kind of adjustments do you guys think Kelvin Shepard will make? Like, what's a fair expectation for tomorrow, I guess, or a concern level for you guys against this offense with Dallas Cowboys?
High, very, very high.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing that concerns me the most is they come out of this game talking about how difficult it is to sack Jordan Love. And it's true. You know, the guy is difficult to sack. He throws very well off his back foot, 17 sacks all year. Guess who else has been sacked 17 times all year?
Oh, let me guess. Dak Prescott.
It's Dak Prescott. Like, they're two of the most difficult quarterbacks to take down. And so I'm very concerned about the pass rush getting right this week. I don't think, you know, it's realistic to expect that. On top of that, the number that's going to stand out, I don't know if, you know, we're all thinking it, but like, the man coverage is a problem. George Pickens eats against man coverage, and it's not even close. Like, he's got 500 yards against man coverage. I think the next is Smith and Jigba with like 315.
That's crazy.
And Justin, then CeeDee Lamb's right there.
Second in yards per game, though, because I know CeeDee's missed some time. CeeDee's second in yards per game in man coverage.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, guys, I say he's sixth overall, but that makes perfect sense. So second, I think the big adjustment tomorrow is they're going to play a lot more zone. And I know, I wish I could remember which game it was, Colton. I know we looked it up. There was a game early in the season that they played significantly more zone than they normally do. I know we talk about them playing man coverage all the time. And in reality, that's like 40-45%. They play plenty of zone, right? Like, every team plays a percentage of both, but I would not be surprised if we come out of tomorrow's game and see that the Lions played 75-80% zone, cover three, cover four, a lot more stuff to take away the deep ball, because Dak also loves to throw deep. I think 52 attempts and I don't know, 23, 24 completions of 20 or more yards, both toward the top of the NFL. They're going to have to protect against that. They're going to have to keep the ball in front of their guys. And when both your corners are sub 6 feet, like, it's a problem.
That's kind of where I'm at. I look at these receivers and, man, I mean, Pickens, what an acquisition. You know, Jerry Jones has been questioned quite a bit, especially this offseason. You trade Micah. Your defense is like one of the worst in the NFL first 2 months of the season. Then you make all these moves. Pickens acquisition is looking really good right now. I mean, he's been one of the best receivers in football. You look at the defensive moves they've made, getting Quinnen Williams in here. He's kind of like turned around that defensive interior position. So they're kind of cooking right now, man. And, you know, playing so much man coverage as the Lions do, I do think that's going to be an issue. And Justin, you kind of mentioned it. That's kind of where my mind was. The height, the size of these cornerbacks, was 5'8", 5'9". That's listed higher, all but hard. Like, that's kind of what I see in the locker room.
That's some driver's license heights right there.
Yeah. man, that's going to be tough. And Pickens might be the best jump ball winner in the NFL right now. He's a freak. So it's certainly going to be tough. And I don't know. I keep going back to what you can do differently. You know, Shep did say, yeah, obviously guys got to win their one-on-ones, but I can do more. I don't know what you can do in terms of generating pass rush. Maybe you blitz a little bit more. Maybe you disguise it better. Maybe you're a little bit more exotic. That's easy for us to say at home. But you got to get home and win those battles when they're available to you. And they just haven't for whatever reason. So guys just got to play a little bit better. You know, we'll see if the coverage, which I think, Justin, you mentioned, I think the average separation is like 2.9 or something like that. Yep. So they've been kind of
really good.
Sticky. It's just, you know, they've had a lot of time to be back there because the pass rush hasn't been able to get home. So I need to see complimentary football from this defense, especially. Like, we can say about the whole team as a whole, but the defense, the rush and the coverage working together. Justin, you had a great lead to your story earlier this week. I want you to drop it for the people if you remember it on the spot, but go ahead.
Defense is supposed to be a marriage of rush and coverage. In the Detroit Lions case, the coverage should ask for a divorce.
Boom.
Bam.
It's hard. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I
it hurts.
Yeah, that it just let that process and
who that marinate their heads.
Yeah.
Let it process a little bit. I mean, we talk about the defense, and you know, there's plenty of things to discuss. We haven't even gotten to the offense yet.
Real quick before we shift gears. First of all, yeah, those DBs, the corners especially, hold up their heights. Like Little League World Series star Danny Almonte held up his age. I am 12. Amik's card says I am 5'9". But you know, the other player that I think this defense is beginning to miss more and more by the week, I think it was really spotlighted last week, is they're all pro safety. And that's the kind of guy who has not only helped put out some fires in the past, but probably more importantly now, just take the ball away. And he was showing such a knack for it last year. And when your pass rush is struggling and your defense is having a hard time getting off the field, sometimes the easiest way to solve that is to come up with a timely takeaway. And those takeaways have really dried up for the Lions. And I think they had 6 in their first 5 games, and they have like 3 or 4 in the 6 or 7 games since. And missing Kirby is a big part of that. But you know, I thought the touchdown throw to Wicks last week kind of brought it to light. Obviously, Brian Branch is first one there who's responsible. He pulled up kind of inexplicably in coverage when we asked him this week. He said he just turned around and instead of looking for the ball, looked back at the quarterback and lost the ball flight. And, you know, he was in position to make the play, but just has to be better there. But also, Thomas Harper was converging on that play where Kirby Joseph usually would be. And, you know, either Thomas Harper was a half second late, or as he told me when I asked him, he just made the mistake of trying to go for the interception on 4th down rather than just breaking up the pass. And that's a young player's mistake. He said, that haunts me. Like I'm going to have a hard time letting that one go. He felt like if he had just tried to break up that pass, knowing that that was as effective on 4th down as an interception, it could have changed the game. And, you know, that's a play that Kirby Joseph probably makes. He's been ruled out again for tomorrow's game. And frankly, when we spoke with him this week, it didn't paint a very optimistic picture about his future. And, you know, I know he's going to seek treatment other than surgery this offseason, but that feels like a kind of an ominous storyline that is bubbling beneath the surface of this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great point about Kirby, by the way. He's the turnovers. He's a big reason. Is a massive reason. I want to talk about the offense, but before we do that, I got to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, so we'll see you back in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper and Sleeper Picks, which you should be using. It's a real money product that connects friends over picks. You guys know what Sleeper is. It's one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world. Millions and millions of active users. And on Sleeper Picks, all you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do a pregame, live, or across different sports. You just pick more or less. suggestion, George Pickens, more, CeeDee Lamb, more, and just from your friend here, Jeff Iafredi, you can hit the more on that. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. You share with your friends, get rewarded together, use the code HMA, and they will take care of you. Appreciate Sleeper, as always, for sponsoring the show. All right. I do want to talk about the offense because Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, in that game against the Packers, just when it couldn't get any worse. And I think the irony of it was a backup offensive lineman rolled on him. No shots at him. I'm just saying it was just like, here we go. Backup offensive lineman gets another player hurt. And then you have Amon-Ra St. Brown with a high ankle sprain, it looks like, or a low ankle sprain. It's more severe than the ankle sprain. He's had ankle sprains in the past, but it's much more severe, obviously. He's questionable to play. Jameson Williams stepped up. He looked incredible. Isaac, you got to see Isaac Tesla, TK85. The guy is just solid. All right, Mason, just solid. You can never count him out. But you already don't have Sam Laporta, okay? Amon-Ra St. Brown is questionable. Those are two of Jared Goff's safety blankets. You have a game tomorrow. I mean, pretty much at this point, every game is a must win. I mean, that's how they're approaching this. And you could be without, or it could be without both your safety blankets tomorrow. So what's, I guess, your guys' thoughts on the offense and the injuries that have, Brock Wright, trachea, like what's going on? Okay, trachea injury. That's like, this stuff doesn't feel real at this point. It doesn't feel real at this point. It doesn't.
I think it was the long Tom Kennedy third down conversion that it didn't hit me till after. I'm looking at the replay. I'm sitting next to Colton. I'm like, look at this side of the field. It's Tom Kennedy, Isaac Tesla, and maybe Anthony Firkser. I mean, you might as well just throw Zach Horton in the backfield. Yeah. I mean, these guys that were playing, like, look, you're NFL players. I'm not gonna sit there and like degrade them, but like, there's such a massive step down from all pro Amon-Ra St. Brown and pro bowler Sam Laporta. Like, you talk about Jared Goff's safety blankets, you're talking about two of the best safety blankets in the league.
Yeah.
And now you've got practice squatter, and rookie who had, I don't know, 150 snaps, and half of them he hasn't looked confident in his assignments. And it's just a mess. And so they desperately need St. Brown tomorrow. And I even like an 80% St. Brown, like, just fixes so much stuff just because of his reliability to be in the right spot at the right time. I think we talked about it previously, like the loss of Sam Laporta is devastating. Like, it's devastating on so many different fronts, from the security blanket to the blocking on the perimeter. You take St. Brown out of there and this is a game that feels like it has to be a track meet. Like, you're going to struggle to slow down that Cowboys offense. So you need to score points. And where are those points going to come from? You know, are you going to throw to J-Mo 16 times? They might, because I feel like that's where this game is heading right now.
Yeah, I feel like they're really going to take that St. Brown decision all the way up to the deadline, 90 minutes before kickoff tomorrow night, and just hope that over the next, what would it be now, basically 24 hours from now, they're going to have to make a decision on Amon-Ra St. Brown and hope that he mends enough between now and then. I just don't get a good feeling about his chances to go, only because he told us yesterday that this ankle sprain was worse than the one he suffered in 2022 against the Vikings, when he actually was able to stay in the game. And then it ended up costing him the following week's game against the Seahawks. And he said in this case, he couldn't come back in the game because the pain was just too much to bear. And he just didn't feel like he had the stability he needed. So maybe in a miracle, this one, though it's worse, heals more quickly and they can get him out there. And boy, will they need him. And I agree, Justin, even if he's at 75%, with the stakes of this game and the state of this team right now, you feel like you just got to give it a go. I was talking with Tesla yesterday, and he obviously expected a bigger role going into last week's game. You know, he thought, and his main focus was just to master the 11 personnel plays where he'd be filling in for Khalif Raymond. And then he was like, you know, and God forbid something happens, I studied some of those 12 personnel plays too. And good thing, because all of a sudden 12 personnel was basically J-Mo and Tesla. And, you know, I thought Tesla handled himself well. I thought it was encouraging that he ended up playing 58 snaps, which was double his previous career high, which actually had come the week prior against the Giants. And, you know, I think you saw some of what he can do and some of what his value is on his touchdown. Down in the red zone, the Lions ran a two-man concept with Tesla and J-Mo, and the Packers dropped like five defenders into the end zone. And Tesla was like, I don't want to hit our quota on F-bombs, but he was like, oh, this is F. This is not going to work. And then he got to the end zone and looked around, and as he put it, like 18 guys were on J-Mo. So at that point, he just improvised. It was like three or four guys on J-Mo, but he improvised, realized that he was being left open, kind of curled his route across the end zone, and Jared hit him. Pass was a little low, but as Tesla said, if you throw it in my vicinity, I'm going to catch everything that comes my way. And he did. Not, you know, that is a lot of what the Lions and Jared Goff are missing in Sam Laporta, is someone who can improvise in moments of chaos, especially in the red zone, especially on third down. So that was good to see. And, you know, it's a slot. He feels like he's got a little more swagger this week, he said, a little more confidence, a little more excitement. And guys, like, the Lions loved him enough, Brad Holmes loved him enough to spend 3 third-round picks on this guy. If ever, there was a time for that decision to look good and for this player to pop, it's without possibly 4 of your top 7 pass catchers, including 2 of your top 3 receivers and your top 2 tight ends down. So feels like Tesla, one way or another, is going to have to make an impact tomorrow night.
Maybe I'm just thinking long term now because, you know, the playoff hopes are what they are, but I do think, like, even if Sain has to miss this game, which that's kind of where my mind's at, maybe give him this week off and hope that he can come back for a trip home next week in LA. But even if let's say Sain can't play, I do think there's a benefit to Jared getting some much needed game reps with Isaac Tesla right now and the Tesla J-Mo combination specifically, because we know what his relationship is with Sain. They're one of the best duos in the NFL. But it almost feels like sometimes he's a little too over-reliant on Saint and maybe just doesn't look anyone else's way because Saint's always open, right? That's kind of what it feels like sometimes. That's probably not true, but that's kind of what it feels like sometimes. So having him build that chemistry with J-Mo, where J-Mo was the number one option, and he goes to him, catches 7 passes for 144 and a touchdown last week, right? Like building that sort of rapport where I feel comfortable going with him. And I'm not saying he doesn't feel that way, but doing it out of necessity, I think, can benefit him. And the same thing with Isaac Tesla. So when they drafted Tesla, I was like, okay, trying to see the vision here. He's obviously talented. He's got some upside. He's the big body target that we've been saying they needed for so long, especially, you know, when you're going to get rid of Tim Patrick and Josh Reynolds isn't here anymore. Like, he can kind of fill that void. It was a little harder to see when they extended J-Mo. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, how do you work that in with all 3 of these receivers? And so I think obviously they haven't needed to go to him as much because they had these other guys available. Now they don't. So I think out of necessity, Jared's going to have to build that chemistry with Tesla. And I think this can pay dividends for next year, especially for the folks that have already jumped off the bandwagon right now for 2025. But I do think that can pay dividends down the road. And look, they're going to need him, right? And you said it yourself, like, Brad traded all these picks for him. Now's the time to see what he can do. Like, they tell these guys, once you get past that halfway point of your rookie year, you're no longer a rookie. You're a vet and you got to play like it. So I think they're going to have some high expectations for him the rest of the year, really.
Tesla said, go ahead, Jaraj.
Let me just marry your 2 points really quickly, right? I wrote the same thing today, Cole. Like, that was the silver lining of St. Brown being out this week, was Tesla's practice reps went through the roof this week. And he talked about just how tired he was because he just hadn't had that kind of workload in practice. But when you think about what accelerates development the most, it's on-field experience. And so I kind of presented the question that way to Scotty Montgomery, his position coach, this week. And he goes, well, it's more than that. It's practicing it and then doing it in the game. And he wasn't even getting those practice reps, you know, previously. He was getting just that fraction of a third receiver role. So these reps that he was running last week, these 12 personnel reps, yeah, he studied for them. He didn't rep them in practice. Like, he's trying to translate what he's seen on paper, what he knows in his head, what he's seen on film. But, like, he hasn't actually done the physical steps to be precise enough to know where he needs to be. Makes that touchdown so much more impressive, because I remember when Sam Laporta was a rookie and he ran a route that was like exactly it was designed and it caused an interception. I remember talking to Goff about him, like, should Sam have done this? And he's like, look, he's a rookie. He doesn't feel like he has that kind of comfort level yet. And that makes perfect sense. Like, you don't want to go outside the framework and get chewed out by your coach because you did something, you ad-libbed, you did something bold. For Tesla to do that, I think shows a lot of confidence in himself. It's going to build confidence with Goff that he has that kind of advanced feel for the game. And then now to get this full week of practice, and whether, you know, he ends up seeing the workload that he's, you know, in the game with, you know, the same Brown decision still kind of lingering there, it doesn't matter. That practice time with Jared this week will pay dividends, I think, going forward this season and into next, when, you know, they're going to need him more.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up Laporta, because I was reflecting on the exact opposite example. In the Rams game in his rookie season, on that fourth down play down near the goal line, they ran a concept that the Rams had completely snuffed out. And in that moment, it was Laporta who ad-libbed at the very last second, and Jared ultimately found him for a touchdown that, if you look back at it, probably saved and won them that game. And it was really encouraging to see Tesla think on his feet and Jared trust him in the same manner last week. He's been repping this week as if he'll be playing, as he said, basically the entire game tomorrow night. So read into that what you will regarding St. Brown's status. I assume it's just a situation where they'd rather have him err on the side of being overprepared than underprepared. But he is taking reps like this week, like he'll be involved in most of those 11 and 12 personnel looks. But yeah, I mean, he was saying the same thing yesterday, Daraj. He was like, last week, after the Lions' first touchdown drive, where he played every single snap, he's sitting on the sideline and he was like, I finally feel tired. Like, I missed this feeling. When you're playing so sporadically, he's like, it's hard to get your legs loose. It's really hard to find a flow in the game. And for the first time this season, I felt myself huffing and puffing on the sidelines and my legs felt loose. And I was feeling like I was playing football again. And so it's not surprising that over the course of the game, he also found himself open a couple of times. And I would expect the ball to come his way, even more tomorrow night. And, you know, it doesn't need to come his way often. Not the same explosive playmaker as J-Mo, but if it comes his way at the right time, at the right areas of the field, on the right downs, he can make a big impact on that game without having to catch more than two or three passes.
And I guess the important question, it's the title of the stream: can the Lions salvage the season? And I guess, depending on who you ask, how would you define salvage? Are you referring to winning the Super Bowl? You still want to make the playoffs? In your guys' mind, based on everything you've seen this year, A, can the Lions salvage the season? And B, what's that look like to you, salvaging the season? What's success at this point? Which many people would say they're out of the playoffs already with two games above 500. You know, that's just where people are at right now, even though they still have a chance to make it. But what do you guys make of it?
When you make a prediction where the odds are 70% in your favor, you're not going out on a particularly weak limb, right? I'm not impressed. They're way outside the playoff picture. They're unlikely to make it right now. But also, it is not out of the realm of possibility. We know this team's moxie, their ability to bounce back, both game to game and within seasons. When you go back to the 1-6 start and the way they finished there, I'm not going to write this team off. I might write them off Friday morning, you know, if they can't bounce back like they have so many times from game to game and they lose the Cowboys, like, you know, at that point we might start writing the obituary. But in reality, they need to go 4-1. They need to win 11 games. If you miss the playoffs and win 11 games, so be it. You know, like,
yeah,
11 should be enough to get you in. Once you're in, we know the story. Anything goes, right? Like, you could pull an upset like the Commanders did to the Lions last year, or you could go on a run. You know, teams have gone on a run from lower seats before. Obviously, maybe the most famous example is the Giants going all the way to the Super Bowl as the fifth or sixth seed, you know, a decade ago. And so, yeah, like, I think the bar of success right now is getting in. Can you still be disappointed by them getting in and losing in the wildcard round? Sure. You know, I get it. You had Super Bowl aspirations walking into this one, but the flaws have also been exposed. We know what they need to fix a little bit more this upcoming off season. We know the injury situations that they're dealing with right now. But I think if they get in with 11 wins, like there's still a degree of success to be found in, you know, what they overcame within the 2025 season.
It's a really nuanced question because let's say they do go on a run and win 4 out of 5 and they get in the playoffs at 11-6. That's probably where a lot of us had them going into the season, like 11-6, maybe 12-5 if you're on the more optimistic end. But like they lost their star offensive coordinator, who they probably were lucky to keep as long as they did, for being honest. Their all-pro center retired. They didn't address the pass rush situation in a meaningful way. Like you look at the they had their holes as much as, you know, 15-2 kind of masked some of that. That was probably last year, maybe like a 12-win team that like overachieved to get to 15. I feel like that's sort of maybe masked some of the conversations going into the offseason. But when you look at where this team is at right now, if they were to be able to do that, that's probably about where we expect them to be. Now, if they rattle off 4 out of 5 and make the playoffs, I'm curious, maybe people in the comments can chime in. Would you be happy with that? Would you feel satisfied? Or is that just kind of the baseline expectation is making the playoffs? I think to some extent you can feel pretty good that you hunkered down when it mattered most. And, you know, Aiden Hutchinson brought it up himself. Like, we call ourselves a gritty team. You know, that word is all over this building, all over the hallways. Like, if we're actually a gritty team, we got to show it. And so if they do hunker down and win some of these games, I think I'd be impressed at least a little bit. It shows me that they have the right guys in the building, and that's why they bring in these guys. They scout the way they do. They draft the way they do. It's for moments like this where you're tested and that adversity shows. Like, they haven't really had to deal with that in recent years. So I think they would kind of be a reminder of the sort of dudes that they have. They can hunker down and go on a run. But if they lose, you know, Campbell brought this up the other day, the 2002 New York Giants team that he played on, I think they're 6-6 in week 14. They won 4 in a row to make it 10-6 and sneak into the playoffs. They lost their first playoff game. So I don't know how that season
they
was remembered.
They didn't just lose that first playoff game, bro. They melted down in one of the most epic playoff collapses of all time. Dan left that part out of the story.
Okay, there you go. There you go. So it's kind of like, I don't know how people would feel about that if they're 1-and-done. If they do all this work to get in and all of a sudden they're out, I don't know how you would feel about that season. So I kind of go back and forth. Like, the playoffs should be the baseline expectations for where this team is with the talent they have. But, you know, I think we can also have a nuanced conversation about like what they've dealt with, the turnover that they've had. This is probably more of a retooling year than we considered in the offseason. And that's okay to say. And they're going to have a full offseason to address some of these issues, whether it's the pass rush, the offensive line, the center position, interior, maybe getting a long-term tackle if Decker is thinking about his future. Those are questions they're going to have to answer this offseason. But for where they are right now, if they can find a way to hunker down and win some of these games, I think you can feel a little bit okay with that. But obviously, it's not where you want them to be.
You know what's going to color the way a lot of fans feel about this season, at least in my mind right now? Week 18 in Chicago, which very well could be a win or get in game for the Lions against a guy who is kind of now the nemesis of this fan base, Ben Johnson. And if they go into that game in Chicago and the Bears are still playing for something, and even if they aren't, I kind of feel like Ben will still play his guys, and they lose and they miss the playoffs at the hands of Ben and finish a 10-7. There will be it'll be an uproar and a large percentage, I would imagine, of fans that consider this season a failure. I think salvaging the season, to answer your question, Jeff, is getting into the playoffs. I agree. It has to be 4-1. If they get there, I feel very confident that they'll make it. 11 wins has been good enough to make the playoffs for every team since they expanded the playoffs to 7 teams in each conference back in 2020. So you'd set yourself up. And I think the other thing that's worth considering here, and I asked Dan about this a couple of days ago, is the landscape of the NFL should change the way, or at least influence the way we look at this team and its ceiling. Like, every single week this season, maybe even more recently, we're seeing upsets. We're seeing that every single team in the league is flawed in its own way, is beatable in its own way. Just take last weekend. We were all ready to anoint the Rams as like the one true juggernaut in the NFC, like the one team that was clearly better than everyone else. And they lose at home to the Carolina Panthers, who are mid. Like, they're fine, but they're mid. And it was just a reminder that there really isn't a behemoth this year that stands in the way of everyone else. I mean, the best team in the AFC is the Patriots. Does anyone really consider them heads and shoulders above everyone else? I certainly don't, despite what they did to the Giants on Monday night. And so I do think this idea everyone is beatable should change the way we consider the Lions' outlook and how we view their ceiling. And I do think because of that, if they get into the playoffs, having played really well for what would be a month and a half there, almost 2 months, that they would have every chance to go on a run as any other team in the field. So we can adjust expectations if and when they get there. But yeah, right now the goal has to be the playoffs, and it's going to come down rather uncomfortably to the two areas that feel like the weaknesses of this team right now. Can they protect their quarterback on the interior, and can they get after the opposing quarterback? And we're going to get a potentially harsh look at that tomorrow night when the Cowboys come to town with Quinnen Williams and Kenny Clark, and they line up against Graham Glasgow, Coyote Awosika, and Tate Ratledge. So I do think those are kind of the two pivot points of the season right now, and we'll see how it shakes out over the final five games.
Will, you made such a good point this week with the chaos of the NFL. And I think it was your question to Campbell, like Denver, you know, another team that I would consider toward the top of the AFC, like had to break up a 2-point conversion against a team that the Lions smashed at their place a few weeks earlier. And, you know, New England, 10-game winning streak. Look at the opponents New England has played during this 10-game winning streak. Like, I'll give you it at the Bills. What else is it? Panthers, Saints, Titans, Browns, Falcons, Buccaneers, Jets, Bengals, Giants. That's a crap schedule. Also,
the top 10 of the draft projections right now, basically.
Yeah. And I also heard today that the Patriots are the healthiest team in football. And so, look, I don't want to make excuses for the Lions. It's going to sound that way. They have played a brutal schedule. That's what happens when you're a good team. You play the tougher schedule. That's the reality of it. They're battling some injuries. They're not overcoming them the way they need to. But what do you think the Lions' record would be if they're playing the Patriots' schedule? They would be 9-1 probably, or 8-2 at worst during that same 10-game stretch. And so, you know, there is some level of context. I think just the talent level across the league, you're really getting that true parity. And the Lions have had some coin flip games against some good teams, and, you know, they didn't go their way more often than not. Could they be 8-4, 9-3? Sure, but they're not. They're 7-5 and, you know, on the cusp here.
Yeah, and like the one team that we all expected to crumble down the stretch is proving that they might actually be real. Chicago goes into Philly the day after Thanksgiving and beats them, which is just another reminder that this is a highly volatile, unpredictable season that kind of opens the door for every team that is good enough to get into the playoffs.
Doesn't speak volume for confidence though, Will. I mean, don't you think, like, compare the Lions right now to the Bears, like which team is playing with confidence that believes they're going to execute in those moments? The Bears are not a good team on paper, certainly not into that Philly game, but I think they started to believe after winning all these games, whereas the Lions have this snowball effect the opposite ways. They can't convert a fourth down. What do you think's going through their mind when they go to the line at fourth down right now? Because I think there's no confidence across that unit that they're going to get the job done.
It feels like the Bears are playing with this, like, blissful ignorance. Like, they have no pressure on them, really. It's like, oh, we're overachieving. Let's just keep going out and winning. It's almost like, I guess, the Lions in 2022 to an extent, when they figured out how to win and they went on that run late in the year. That's, it feels like they're playing with that same, like, you know, we're not playing with the weight of an entire city right now. We're just going out and trying to win football games. That's what the Bears feel like right now. And the Lions on the opposite end are kind of pressing and realize there's a sense of urgency and they have to get it done. The margin for error is very slim right now.
Not to make this the Bears collective, but you know what else they're doing? You know what else they're doing that resembles the Lions when they began finding their stride?
Turnovers.
Turnovers, and they're ramming the ball down teams' throats. I mean, what did they put up against Philly? They just, like, pile yards on the ground with a lot of really creative rushing schemes. And it's hard to knock the Lions' rushing attack because they're now second in the L, kind of in the NFL, impossibly in yards per carry. But we can all watch that rushing attack and know that on a down-to-down basis, it has not been the force or the reliable asset that it has been in the past. And the Bears are discovering that they seem to have that right now behind a rebuild offensive line.
You know, for our, of course, Dog and Pony Show Brewing, our picks of the week, We got to mention Dog and Pony here with Kyle.
Yeah.
Kyle's got something special going on. Will, tell the people. Look at this. Colton's got the hat. He's got the perch.
I'm rocking the lid too. I'm rocking the lid. You know, come on.
Look at that. Look at that
low angle. I couldn't even see it. There we go.
Hey, so our friends at Dog and Pony Show, which is just the best brewery in town. If you haven't been, go. If you do go, mention the Lions Collective. It's always $1 off your beers. If you do that and you order 8 beers, your 9th is pretty much free. I've been hammering home that point all year. Anyone can drink 8 Kernel Lagers. I'm not suggesting you go in there and you drink 8 of the stouts that are like 17%. But yeah, anyone over the course of an NFL Sunday can take down 8 Kernel Lagers, and then your 9th is free. Look at it like that. But hey, just so everyone is aware, the brewery will be open on Mondays through December from 4:00 to 10:00, and also will be open late for the game tomorrow night against the Cowboys. One of the coolest game day watching spots in Metro Detroit. They got a big ass projector, bunch of TVs, tons of space. I know they've had some special guests there in the past to fire up the crowd. So if you're looking for a good spot to watch tomorrow, definitely go check them out and drop our name for some deals on your beers. And just keep an eye out. They got a bunch of awesome stuff planned over the next couple of weeks in Christmas and New Year. So make sure you stop in and say what up. Kyle, if you mention Lions Collective and you ask for Kyle, trust me, bro, he will treat you right. Kyle is the best in the biz.
Love Kyle, man.
Yeah, he gave me more beer than I knew what to do with.
And I got some in the back of my car. I'm about to crack one.
All right.
What is this podcast?
Just going to sit in the Sunoco lot and drink.
a comment saying, doing a beer ad read in the car is crazy. I love it.
Going to get lawyers. Not actually coffee. Next week.
Yeah, and then insinuating I'm going to go crack one open.
I'm like 5 miles from home.
before we get out of here, what do we think, guys? I mean, we obviously it got better towards the end in terms of confidence. I thought we did a good kind of, we went through the valleys there with things were tough. Now we had we just came off a good conversation about why people should be a little more optimistic. Let's just cut the crap. All right. Lions, Cowboys. What do we think? Who comes out with a victory tomorrow?
I think the streak of rebound games comes to an end, gentlemen. Yep. And look, I think I've had a reverse curse here. Both ways all season. So don't bet on what I say, but I just really see the Lions having a difficult time keeping up in this one with the two factors, both their lack of pass rush and their lack of offensive weapons. And I've been on this kind of all week. I think the Cowboys are coming in here with vengeance on the brain, the same way the Lions went in there with vengeance on the brain last year. And just embarrassed them at their place. I think you're going to see a little bit of an effort to do that. So give me the Dallas Cowboys at your place, 30-20.
Yeah, I tend to think the streak is coming to an end as well. And I thought about it. I'm like, how do the Lions win this game? Honestly, I thought Jared Goff played pretty well, all things considered, last week, like 20-26, and was, you know, smart with the football. I think at one point he completed like what 15 something passes plus in a row.
Yep.
Like he was keeping them in that one despite not having Sam Laporta and Saint and having to work with different guys on the fly. But I don't know, man. I really think the Cowboys are playing some good football. And you know, last week I picked the Lions over the Packers because I said that's a game that they normally, against all odds, though, that's the type of game that they get up and win for whatever reason. I'd like to say that this week, and maybe that's what maybe I was just a week off. So if I put this out there, maybe it'll happen now. But I just don't see it. I think, you know, the Cowboys, what they're doing with their interior defensive line, that's going to be an issue. These receivers on the outside. I don't have a lot of trust in the Lions pass rush right now. They are obviously short-handed on offense. So I think I'm going to go Cowboys 28, Lions 24.
Yeah, I was going to make a version of the same point, Colton. I definitely went with instinct over logic last week. Like, that matchup on paper favored the Packers in so many ways, but it just felt like a game that Dan Campbell was going to will his team through. And eventually and ultimately it was Matt LaFleur who kind of did the opposite and served the Lions and Campbell a taste of their own medicine. And I struggle this week to pick against logic and the paper for another week in a row. I mean the interior of this defensive line, it has been a problem, and the interior of this offensive line has been leaky. It's been an issue, and that's kind of where it starts for me tomorrow. I thought that maybe it was Jared Goff this week, who usually doesn't say much, who kind of put it best when he was like, yeah, if you want to run away from Quinnen's, you're running into Kenny Clark. And if you want to run away from Kenny Clark, you're running into Quinnen. And if the Lions can't establish the run early, and then that the interior protection starts to wilt, and they can't keep up and attract me, I just don't know how they turn this game in their favor. I guess the path to win for them would demand a couple takeaways and then converting those takeaways into points. But yeah, I don't see it for this defense. Also tomorrow, I think CeeDee and George just caused too many problems. And unless Shep has some trick up his sleeve that we are just completely unaware of, I don't know how the Lions keep the Cowboys under 24, maybe even under 30. And I just don't think that there is enough juice in this offensive line right now to keep up. I'll take Dallas 28, Detroit 20.
Jeff, send the fans home happy. Jeez.
Bert, you mentioned problems. Speaking of problems, old friend James Houston, the problem.
Yeah.
We're playing for the Cowboys right now, in case people want another reason to be mad.
That's right. And watch out for BC's own Donovan Azaraku, who earned a shout out from Campbell on Monday, talking about the assets the Cowboys have on defense. And I don't know, maybe that's a good way to round this show off. Like Donovan Azaraku, and I'm not just saying this as a fellow Boston College grad, put up all kinds of numbers at BC, and everyone agreed entering the draft was one of the best pure speed rushers in that class. And I think a lot of us just didn't see the schematic fit for the Lions. And that's a problem. Like if your priorities on defense eliminate from your draft board, in theory, one of the fastest, most explosive pass rushers, maybe you need to reevaluate the way that you're assessing those guys. So that's just my read of the situation. I don't know for sure how they viewed Azaraku, but it never seemed like a guy that they would take a chance on. And maybe he'll prove to them tomorrow night that maybe they should have.
Yeah, I got 31-21 Cowboys. Sorry, guys. Let's get out of here.
Is that a clean sweep?
Clean sweep. Maybe that's
good. Lions are going to win then.
Yeah, that's a lock. Go to sleeper, hammer. Put the mortgage on Detroit.
There you go. Gamble responsibly. Do not have a beer in the vehicle. All right. Do you remember that selection of the day? Do not drink in the vehicle. All right. We'll see you guys next Wednesday. Appreciate you all.
Peace.